वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाद गुरुले श्रीमद् भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नाम्ने नमस्ते Sarasara Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivari Pashtatade Shitarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasri Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10, Chapter 49, Verse 15, Namah Krishnaya Sudhaya Brahmane Paramatmane Yogeshwaraya Yogaya Svam Aham Sharanam Gata. Namah Krishnaya Sudhaya Brahmane Paramatmane Yogeshwaraya Yogaya Tvamaham Sharanam Gata. Namah Krishnaya Sudhaya Brahmane Paramatmane Yogeshwaraya Yogaya Swamaham Sharanam Gata. Sudhaya, pure, Brahmane, absolute truth. Paramatmane, super soul. Yoga, a pure devotional service. Ishvaraya, the controller. Yogaya, source of all knowledge. Tvam, you. Aham, I. Sharanam, for shelter. Gata, have approached. Translation, I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna, the supreme pure, the absolute truth, and the super soul, the Lord of pure devotional service, and the source of all knowledge. I come to you for shelter. Purport, Sridhar Swami has translated the word yogaya as unto Krishna, the source of knowledge. The word yoga indicates connection and also the means to achieve something. As conscious souls, we have connection with the Supreme Soul through bhakti or devotion. Through the relation, we experience perfect knowledge of the Supreme Soul. Since the Supreme Soul is the absolute truth, perfect knowledge of Him means perfect knowledge of everything. As stated in the Mundaka Upanishad, Kasmin Bhagavo Vigyate Sarvamidam Vigyatam Bhavati, when the absolute truth is understood, everything is understood. Thus, Lord Krishna Himself, by His spiritual potency, establishes our connection with Him, and that connection is the source of all spiritual knowledge. Thus, Acharya Sridhar, by his thoughtful translation, stimulates us to a deeper understanding of Krishna conscious philosophy. Translation, I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna, the supreme pure, the absolute truth, and the super soul, the Lord of pure devotional service and the source of all knowledge. I have come to you for shelter. This is a prayer by Kunti Devi. And as we know, Kunti Devi in several places has given her prayers to the Supreme Lord. In the first canto, she gives prayers which are very famous. So she is known as a very exalted devotee of the Supreme Lord, pure devotee of the Lord, actually a Nitya Siddha devotee of the Lord. Though a devotee may be on a very, very elevated stage, as a Nitya Siddha or whatever, they engage in the same devotional processes that we perform in sadhana bhakti. However, we should not think that because they do such activities, they are in some way inferior. In normal other processes, we would think that if the same activities continue after perfection, it is some sort of fault. So if a person is studying in school and he has to learn A, B, C, and then he goes on to more complex mathematics and trigonometry and calculus and so many other things, finally he gets his mathematics PhD or something after many years of study. If he goes back and starts ABC again, people will think there's something wrong with him. Why is he studying ABC and all this when he's graduated and he knows so many exalted subject matters? It should already be, you know, known to him. And why is he practicing like this, like a grade school student? And similarly, we have different processes in spiritual life, such as Astanga Yoga, which you start up at Yama and Niyama, and then go on to Asana and Pranayama and Pratyahara and Dharana and Dhyana, and then Samadhi. So if you reach Samadhi, then you're in a perfect trance and you don't move at all. So someone will see you doing the asanas at that stage and say, what are you doing? You're gone back to, you know, stage three. You're supposed to be in Samadhi and doing no activities, only concentrating on the Lord. Even in spiritual processes, the perfection is different from the sadhana. In other words, the sadhya is the perfection. That which is attained is called sadhya. And that which is the practice is called the sadhana. So we have sadhana and sadhya. It's more remarkable in jnana. In jnana, of course, what is the sadhana? Study of Vedanta. Detachment from everything in the material world. Austerities. And what is the perfection, the sadhya? Mukti. And what happens in mukti? Nothing. No activity, nothing. No meditation, nothing. Simply one is merged in Brahman. So if you're immersion from Ron and you come back and you start studying Vedanta, then you're in Maya. Why should you study Vedanta? You're one with God. So the sadhana and the sadhya are usually different. But in bhakti, it is not like that. The sadhana and the sadhya are actually the same. The sadhana is hearing about Krishna, kirtan, worshipping the Lord. And sadhya, the perfection, prema also. We do kirtan, hear about the Lord, and we worship the Lord. So the same activities continue in prema that we've done in sadhana bhakti. So there's a difference between bhakti and all the other spiritual processes and all the other material processes. The same activities are there in sadhana and sadhya, in sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti. So of course, what's the difference then? If I'm doing sadhana bhakti, do I have prema? Because I'm doing hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. Not exactly, because the same activities are there, but we can say the intensity and the purity and the amount of devotion is different. So the activities are the same, but we say the content is different. Then we could say, well, then in sadhana bhakti we are doing material activity. Krishna chanting the holy name must be material, and then we get spiritual activity when we get prema. So that's then it's a different activity, actually. But no, all these activities are considered purely spiritual, even in the sadhana stage. So sadhana bhakti is also considered to be spiritual. It is not material. So Acharyas are saying that bhakti is also a shakti of the Lord. And that shakti of the Lord comes from Krishna. It's part of his sarup shakti, it's part of Krishna. And if we perform bhakti, then that is part of Krishna also. That is part of his shakti. is spiritual shakti. So it's not a material activity, hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. Of course, we can say, well, if someone pretends to do devotional service, or someone is a mayavadi and he performs devotional service, actually, we can't call that devotional service. Then what is it? Because it's the shakti of Krishna. How can it be? And we say, no, it's not the shakti of Krishna. It's imitation only. So, and when we talk about bhakti, we're talking about actual bhakti. Then it is shakti of Krishna. So a person who seriously performs devotion, bhakti with faith, actually, there is shakti of Krishna there. It is a transcendental activity. And if we look in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, there, Krishna describes to Uddhava the different things in the modes of nature, things in tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun, and then things beyond the gunas. So what's beyond the gunas? Bhakti, Supreme Lord, the devotee, the dhammas, everything related to Krishna, prasadam, these are all nirguna. And all the other things like jnana is sattvagun, karma yoga is rajagun. Different processes are in the gunas, but bhakti is transcendental, it's from the Lord. So therefore, even the neophyte devotee who's got faith and practicing bhakti, actually that bhakti is transcendental. Something very, very special. So we should not no way think that therefore chanting the holy name or other devotional processes are equivalent to pious material activities. This is the eighth aparad, to consider bhakti a material process like the other material processes. What do the other material processes give? Karma will give you elevation to svargaloka and more material enjoyment. Jnana, if done properly with a little bhakti, will give you liberation. But bhakti can give those things, will give those things, but the devotee doesn't want those things. And bhakti actually gives much more than that. Whatever karma and gyan and yoga and any other process can give, bhakti can give that, but it gives something very special because it is non-different from Krishna. So of course now we say that bhakti is spiritual and non-different from Krishna, but when I do my devotional service and chant the holy name, I don't feel Krishna directly, otherwise I would get prema directly. Krishna appears before me directly in the holy name, then I should have prema. But in sadhana bhakti, we don't get that. So there is a difference between the bhakti we do in sadhana and the bhakti we do in prema. There is some obvious difference, even though we say it's all Krishna shakti and it's nirguna, beyond the material energy. Very powerful, definitely, but there is a difference. That is why we designate them differently. One is called sadhana bhakti, and it's called prema bhakti. Difference. So how can Krishna, is Krishna's absolute, how can it be different? How can it be contaminated? How can it be less than 100% powerful and perfect and full of prema? And that devotional service is different degrees. How is it possible? The reason, of course, is it is not that there's anything wrong with bhakti. Bhakti is always Krishna. The holy name is always Krishna. The only problem is the consciousness and the obstacles and coverings on the jiva. This influences the quality of bhakti that would manifest. So we talk about chanting the holy name, for instance, and in the process of sadhana, it is often called namabhas. But even in namabhas, we can go get sudanam. And of course, when we get perfection, then we chant with prema. So what is that abhas? That the holy name is absolute, and we're chanting the absolute holy name, but we do not get the right effect. So in Nectar Devotion, there Rupa Goswami compares prema to the sun. And of course, the sun, when it's out, is very, very bright, full of energy. We can compare the holy name also to the sun, and like Krishna and prema bhakti.
It's all very, very bright. And the position of the Nama Bas in comparison to the sun is that there is some influence of the sun, but not completely. So it is like the sun on a cloudy day. The sun is present, definitely. Huh? But there's clouds covering the sun. So therefore, we do not get the same amount of light. So for a jiva doing sadhana bhakti, there are coverings which prevent all of the power of the holy name from manifesting. And when we remove all those coverings, then we have like the sun, fully bright with no clouds. And that becomes prema. Pure name. Because the jivas are in the material world and conditioned, even though they practice bhakti, which is transcendental, all the wonderful effects of Krishna and the prema bhakti don't manifest because of the coverings on the jiva. So that is why we have a difference between sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti. The process is spiritual, but due to the coverings on the jiva, we do not see the same manifestation of bhakti as in prema. In this way, the sadhana and the sadhya are the same, but also different. The effect, the appearance, when it finally comes out in the sadhaka, the devotee, is different from the effect that comes out in the prema bhakta. Chanting is the same process, but the effect will be somewhat different. But it is nevertheless spiritual. So that is the great mercy of Krishna, that through sadhana bhakti and through the holy name, we have something which is completely, completely spiritual that we can access. Very, very powerful. The only problem is the coverings on the jiva. So what are these coverings? What covers, what obstructs the holy name? What are the clouds which prevent us from observing and experiencing Krishna directly and the holy name directly and bhakti directly? What is the obstacle? So the obstacle is, there's several obstacles. One obstacle is called ignorance. Ignorance obviously is very, very evil because it creates a lot of problems for us. And in fact, ignorance is the whole root of our material existence. But on one level, ignorance is, we can say, removed by jnana, by knowledge. So we can remove part of the covering on the jiva and therefore chant in a much more perfect way by getting knowledge. But when we talk about knowledge, it is not that knowledge which instructs bhakti, that is jnana karma anavratam. It should not be covered by jnana and karma. So it is not that jnana. That jnana which gives you enlightenment is knowledge about the Supreme Lord. That is encouraged. So that Sambandha jnana or Bhagavat jnana, that we must have. Otherwise, if we have ignorance about all Krishna, we cannot chant properly. We have lots of clouds. So we do have to have knowledge. Where do we get the knowledge from? We get it from scripture. Therefore, we do have to have a scriptural basis for our bhakti. We cannot simply do bhakti saying, I will. Bhakti means pure emotion for Krishna, love for Krishna, so I will ignore all the scriptures. No, simply love Krishna. Unless you know something about Krishna and the process of bhakti, you will do it wrong. And therefore, it will be an obstacle, like a cloud, and you cannot do it purely. So we have to have knowledge. Knowledge of what? We have to have knowledge of jiva and the difference of jiva from Krishna. We have to know they are different. We have to know they both exist, but they are different. And that is the basis of bhakti. We have to know what is the process of connection. The process of connection is bhakti. So we have to know how to perform bhakti. We have to know the definition of bhakti. We cannot do bhakti unless we know what it is. To know what it is, we have to define it. And so there is a particular definition of bhakti, and we have to know what it is. So that's all knowledge. And therefore, and we have to know what is the result. What is my final result of the bhakti? If we have a process but we don't know what the result is supposed to be, it is very difficult to do the process. You'll simply keep doing the process, and you don't know where you're going. You have to understand where the goal is. Of course, in the material world, if you don't have a goal, you don't accomplish anything. So we need to understand all this. So factually, this means knowledge of sambandha, that is, who is Krishna, who am I, difference of jiva from Krishna, etc. Abhideya, process of bhakti, and prayojana, what is the final result of that sadhana, of sadhana bhakti. We have to know that very clearly. So that is given in the scriptures. As Lord Chaitanya says, the whole purpose of the Vedas is simply to give us sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, these three aspects. And with that, then you can perform bhakti nicely. In that sense, you can start removing the clouds, and therefore the bhakti will be more strong, powerful, in its effect. So that's the one of the things. Of course, that's not the only problem. The shastric knowledge you must have, and we get that from the devotees. The other problem, of course, is even if we have the knowledge, still we have impurities, desires for material enjoyment, desires for liberation, desires for cities and powers, and various aparads we may commit. So all these things will act as coverings over the purity of the holy name and the power of the holy name. These are called anarthas. So the anarthas must also be removed. So two things. Remove the ignorance by knowledge, and that, therefore we go to scripture and hear from the devotees, and then removal of anarthas. So how do we remove anarthas? How do we get purified of anarthas? Answer is, the process itself will do it. The bhakti process will do it. But the problem is that if we're doing namabhas or bhaktiabhas, it's not very strong, it's very weak. So therefore it takes a long time to remove all these obstacles. We get anartha nivritti taking place, but it takes some time to do that because the bhakti itself is not very powerful. But gradually it does so. So even if you chant namabhas, do bhaktiabhas, and you go on like that, you can advance, but it's a slow process. So there's also a quicker process. How can we remove the anarthas more quickly? So we have to do the process of bhakti anyway, that's there. But if we do the process of bhakti in the association of devotees who are free from anarthas, then we can advance more quickly. So therefore, if we have association of devotees who are on a higher level, then it's easier for us to come up to that level, whatever that level is, much quicker. And get rid of those anarthas. On the other hand, if we have bad association, we can nourish the anarthas more and more. And therefore, it's very, very difficult to advance. So that is why we have the idea of avoid the bad association. And on the other hand, we accept satsanga, good association. And in that association, then we perform the bhakti. And then we have quicker effect. So if we know what the anarthas are and we actually understand our own anarthas, then that also is advantageous to us. We can begin to uproot the anarthas by intense avoiding and then practicing bhakti in a very intense way in association of devotees. So in this way, we can come to get rid of the anarthas and come to the level of pure chanting and pure bhakti. Interestingly enough, Rupa Goswami begins the whole of sadhana bhakti with pure bhakti. He does not expect you to have all these anarthas and all the coverings, etc. Yes, there are anarthas, but they are somewhat minimized. They're not in a huge form which will cause mixed devotional service like karma, Mr. Bhakti, or something like that. So even for the beginning of devotional service, Rupa Goswami has very, very high expectations. Therefore, he calls even sadhana bhakti, uttama bhakti, or pure bhakti, highest type of bhakti. That is to distinguish it from mixed bhakti. I do devotional service, but I also want to fulfill my material desires and like this, I worship Krishna to get material fulfillments, whatever. So he says, if you really want the goal of prema, then you cannot have mixture. And therefore, even the sadhana must be called uttama bhakti. We have to reject all other goals except Krishna. Even in sadhana bhakti. Now, of course, we are not pure. So therefore, the stage is, you know, we do bhajana kriya, anartana vritti. So anartas are still there. We get to nishtha ruchi sakti. That is a sadhana. But still, we must do uttama bhakti. We must be explicitly rejecting material goals and liberation, yoga siddhis, etc. That much we have to get rid of. So where our attempt is to try to do it purely, even though we're not pure. So that is what we call sadhana bhakti for people in our line. It's uttama bhakti, but it's called sadhana bhakti. So we do the hearing and the chanting, etc., which is transcendental, nirguna, beyond the modes of nature. So if we do it in that way, it becomes much more powerful than people who do mixed bhakti, people who are doing it with ignorance, people who are doing it full of anartas. And if we do it in the way that Rupa Goswami is saying, then one can advance more steadily and more quickly. So through that process, then eventually all the anartas disappear, and simultaneously the jiva develops his devotion and love for Krishna. And that becomes stronger and stronger through hearing, chanting, remembering, deity worship, etc. Even though we're using the eyes and all the other material senses, hands, etc., material body, the jiva begins to develop love through that process. How can that happen? How can the material senses influence the jiva like that and create bhakti? So it's not exactly like that, because when you're engaging the senses, the Atma is not simply sitting there. The Atma itself has to have favorable devotion to the Lord. This is the whole basis of bhakti itself. Anukunan Krishna Nusilanam. One continuous service to Krishna with a favorable attitude. So that is coming from the Atma. So in devotional service, it is not the mind operating, it's actually the Atma has to operate. And we have to, our desire to serve Krishna should come from the Atma, not from the mind. If the Atma is really rejecting Krishna and only the mind is saying, I'm doing devotional service, then it is very superficial. It's a mental concoction. And then someone can come along and convince you otherwise by logic, and then you go off and do something else. So the conviction to serve Krishna is based on faith. That faith is such that it doesn't move away from Krishna in spite of all the logical things that happen in the mind or whatever. That is called firm faith. In the beginning, of course, that faith in the Atma is komala. And people can convince you logically, even they do so. Still, after a while, you come back and you kind of reject their logic, and you come back and you still have faith. If you're strong, you have stronger faith, then even the logic is there, you ignore their logic and you stick to the bhakti process. So anyway, the soul is operating at all times with favorability towards Krishna, and then as we practice bhakti using the senses, the favorable thing turns into actual bhakti and devotion in the Atma. And when it is sufficient, then Krishna decides that he will surrender to that devotee and show himself to the devotee. That is called bhava stage. And the Lord reveals himself. But even then, the Lord is merciful and he reveals himself to a devotee who is not still pure. He's not 100% pure. He's only pure when he reaches prema. So therefore the Lord reveals himself only sometime to the devotee in bhava. And then in prema, when the devotee is 100% pure, the Lord gives himself to the devotee. And that is the highest stage. In all this, still the activities continue. Hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping Krishna. But it happens not only on the outside, but on the inside. In other words, we're doing using our senses now to do that. And then in bhava and prema, Atma itself has a spiritual body. That's the activities for Krishna. So externally we may not do anything. Maybe in some yoga trance or something, bhakti trance. Inside we're worshipping Krishna and serving Krishna. In our spiritual body. So what are we doing in the spiritual body? We are chanting Krishna's name, remembering Krishna, worshiping Krishna, serving Krishna. Same activities as we do now. So that's the difference. Now we're doing it externally. Then we're doing it with our spiritual body. But the activities continue. So the Nitya Siddhas are fortunate because their body is that we see is non-different from the spiritual body. We don't have a difference between this body and our spiritual body for the Nitya Siddhas. So they're chanting, praising the Lord like this, but it's actually their spiritual body. So this is Siddha Bhakti. And they're doing praising the Lord, Kirtan, and in Sadhana Bhakti also. We're doing the same thing, but we're a little different. Because we've got a material body. The Atma hasn't got so much devotion yet. But the process is the same. So therefore, bhakti itself is spiritual. And it resides in the Atma. But it doesn't develop fully until you reach bhava and prema. Which is prema, then you operate in your spiritual body and do these processes. Okay, any question? Well, Super Soul actually is only a partial manifestation of the Lord. So Bhagavan is the personality who manifests completely the Vladini Shakti, Sanvit Shakti, and Sandini Shakti completely. And the Paramatma manifests to some degree, but the Vladini Shakti does not manifest to the same degree. Of course, we have Satchidananda in the Lord, and Sat is the Brahman aspect predominantly. That doesn't mean there's no chit, obviously. Brahman has some chit in it, and Ananda also, because we get bliss from Brahman also. But the mound is much, much less. So in Paramatma, the chit aspect becomes more prominent, the knowledge aspect. The Hladini is still there, and Sat is still there. But Hladini is still in a minor position. That's why it's different from Bhagavan. Bhagavan, the Hladini is the predominant Shakti there, and the others are also there naturally. So that is literally Paramatma, and so therefore, when we establish a relationship with Paramatma, it is not the same with Bhagavan, because the Hladini is very minimal. So there is some sort of relationship, but at most it can be some sort of Shantarasa at best, and there's no service really. Oh, that the Yadavas had knowledge of Super Soul. Well, actually, it depends on the Yadavas. There's two aspects of the Yadavas. The Yadavas are also considered Nitya Siddhas. And if we see the grading in Lago Bhagavatamrita and in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, devotees are classified, even we don't like to say there's inferior and superior devotees, because all devotees are wonderful. And if they're Nitya Siddha devotees are pure devotees, then we shouldn't say that one is better than the other. But nevertheless, according to their intensity of the relationship with the Lord, then there's a classification of devotees. So Lago Bhagavatamrita there, Rupa Goswami, at the bottom he'll put Prahlad at the bottom. Well, of course, there's many below there. He was Prahlad near the bottom. And above that, the Pandavas. And above that, the Yadavas. And above that, Uddhava. And above that, the Rajavasis and the Gopis. And above that, Radha on top. So it's a general classification. So what that means is that this is, of course, those pure devotees. They have relationships such as as you ascend up to the higher and higher categories, the bhakti is more intense, and Krishna's association with those devotees is much more prominent. So Pandavas see Krishna sometimes, and Krishna lives with them. So that is better than with, let's say, Prahlad, where he doesn't live with them constantly. He doesn't live with them very intimately, but he lives intimately with the Pandavas, but not all the time. But he's always living with the Dwarkavasis, most of the time anyway. So therefore they're considered higher because Krishna is with them. But people in Dwarka, the Yadavas, also complain that actually Krishna's kind of with us, but actually we never see him. He's always with the queens in his apartments and stuff like that, and he comes out in the morning and he's in the assembly for an hour. There we see him in the assembly, then he disappears again and we don't see him all day. But the one who is with Krishna constantly among the Yadavas is Uddhava. Uddhava goes with Krishna everywhere, into the apartments, with the queens, everywhere. So he's always with Krishna. So he's much more intimate than we are. But actually higher than that, of course, is the people in Vrindavan and the gopis. And then highest is Radha. There's this sort of gradation there. So the Yadavas are different from the Brajavasis because they understand Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Now their devotion, of course, is even higher than the Vishnu forms, definitely, because it's Krishna. But as Krishna, it is inferior to the love of the Brajavasis, because the Brajavasis don't see Krishna as God. That's an obstruction to their love. So they all know Krishna as God, and they appreciate him as God, but they also appreciate him as their relative, etc. So it's a mixture there. But that idea that he is God restricts their love to some degree. So it's considered less. Who is Krishna as God? So we see him as Supreme Lord. We can see sometimes Krishna manifests four hands also. In that sense, we can say he is like Paramatma. But of course, he's also different, because Paramatma, basically, you cannot really develop rasa except a vague form of Shanta rasa. But the Dwarkavasis, most of them have at least Dasya rasa. And there's a bit of Sakya rasa, and for the queens it is Madhurya rasa. And there's Vatsalya rasa among the elders, and Vasudeva and Devaki. So there is different rasas there also. So we can say it is kind of like Paramatma realization, but actually superior to that. And if we consider the people in Vaikuntha, that is realization of Vishnu. So that is that realization is inferior to the Krishna realization, because Krishna manifests 64 qualities and Vishnu only manifests 60 qualities. Of course, the four qualities are not manifest so much in Dwarka as they are in Raja. Those four qualities are much more sweet. Of course, he doesn't play his flute in Dwarka, or he plays his flute in Vrindavan. Anyway, if you have Narayan realization, even that is superior to Paramatma realization as such, because at least there's Dasya Rasa there in Vaikuntha. And the people worship him with Dasya, and they have a relationship and they serve him. When we only realize Paramatma like the Paramatma yogis, they don't even serve him. They just realize him. And they respect that form, but they don't actually do service. So that's why it's not called Dasya Rasa. Best we can say Shanta Rasa is a neutral relationship. So that is inferior then to the people even in Vaikuntha, when they realize the same form, but they do service to the form. So therefore, the bliss is, you can say, more. So the Pladini Shakti is manifest more to them. Of course, now the other point is that the people in Dwarka, also the Yadavas, what happened is that part of the Yadavas, merged in the Yadavas, are the Devatas. Because Brahma told the Devatas that he got a message from the Lord, I will incarnate, so you also, Devatas, you must also appear in the families of the Yadavas. So the Devatas in their amsa forms, partial forms, they expanded themselves and they merged into the bodies of the Yadavas and participated in their pastimes. So their realization will be somewhat less than even the Yadavas. Yes, they separated and they went back to Devaloka.
Which is in the material world.
Yeah. And the actual Yadavas disappeared and they remain in Dwarka performing their pastimes with Krishna. So they're still there. Aprakat Lila. That's Nitya. What is that? Rohini and Sister Vidura? Oh. First chapter? Already. Rohini says no. Vidura is what the son of Vyasa, so and brother of the Pandavas, Yudhisthira, or not, I mean, I'm sorry, Pandu, and Dhritarashtra. Where does Rohini come from? I can look it up, but definitely they seem to be a different generation. A little bit of a generation gap there. Father was, who was Srivati's? Oh, no, Rohini. I don't know, actually. I can look it up. But it's different, anyway. Okay, you're not related to Vidura at all, I don't think. What's that? Yeah, well, I don't know how he could be the sister. The sister could be. That's strange, rather strange. I'll look it up in the thing. Maybe it's a mistake. There are a few mistakes there I'm seeing, like in the first canto, all sorts of mistakes. Like Vidura was cursed by Mandukya Muni. But actually, it's Mandavya Muni. And, you know, Yamaraj was cursed by the sage, and he became Vidura. Yeah? So it's actually Mandavya Muni, but it says Mandukya Muni there. But later on, the text of the Bhagavata says Mandavya Muni, he cursed him. So some mistakes are there sometimes. All the Nityasiddhas that come with the Lord have spiritual bodies.
All of them?
Yeah, yeah. But it may be difficult for us to differentiate between the Nityasiddhas and the Sadhana Siddhas coming in this material world, joining them in their pastimes before they enter into the spiritual world. We may not be able to distinguish them completely. Yes, she's a Nityasiddha. Yeah. And like the gopis, some are sadhana siddhas, like the sages of Dandakaranya forest, who meditated on Rama to have a conjugal relationship, and then they became gopis in Krishna Lila. So they are sadhana siddha, coming out of the material world. And yeah, but the others are Nityasiddhas. Many of the gopis are Nityasiddhas there. From Satyaloka. Do they come down? Well, it's mentioned, and I think in the second or third canto there, that when it describes Satyaloka, that the people there are more or less perfect, and the only problem, the only interruption of their happiness is their compassion that they feel for the suffering people down below. When they see the suffering down below, then they get a little disturbed by that. So that is the amount of disturbance that they have on Satyaloka. So they do have awareness of the people down on this planet, etc. But just like the devatas on Svargaloka, generally they don't make personal appearances on our planet at this stage anyway. They operate through their laws and their powers, but they don't manifest themselves directly unless the person is very, very qualified. So in previous ages, sometimes when they did the sacrifice, the devatas would appear because the people were qualified to see them. They're not qualified, they won't show themselves. Yeah? So, of course, on Brahmaloka is higher, and the people on Svargaloka cannot even go up to Brahmaloka. They can't go up there because they're not qualified. Yeah? Those on the higher level can come down. Those who are on Mahaloka and Janaloka and Tapaloka can come down to Svargaloka and come down here if they want to. But those on Svargaloka cannot go upward because they're not qualified. And so, then if the people on Svargaloka don't manifest themselves down here, what to speak of people on Satyaloka, much more subtle beings, whatever. So it's very difficult for people down here on earth to even see them. They're not Jesus qualified. Not said in Shastra, I don't know.
When do you think
he was? I have no idea. Some saintly region, I don't know where. But all the places of Svargaloka are definitely very, very pure. The sages live on Mahaloka and Janaloka and Tapaloka, very, very pure. But then highest is in Satyaloka.
Maharaj,
Yeah. Well, it's very difficult for a person in the conditioned state to understand that. But if he that tendency of having faith is there, some feeling is there, and it is constant and it doesn't waver, then we can say that is coming from the Atma. Whereas if you know something is very superficial and it's subject to the conditions around you, like anything in the mind, then we can say it's mental only. Okay. Hare Krishna.